in your spare time. Abraham's eyes grew blacker. You are the one who muddied the order of things. First with your infatuation with a mortal, and then by turning on your own kind to protect this girl. Abraham shook his head as if Macon was nothing more than an impetuous boy. And where has it left us? Now the Duquesne child has cleaved the moon. Do you know what this means? The threat she poses to all of us? The fate of my niece is none of your concern. You seem to have your hands full enough with your own science experiment of a child. Although, I have to wonder what you're doing with him. Macon's green eyes glowed as he spoke. Be careful who you speak to that way. Hunting took a step forward, but Abraham put up his hand and Hunting stopped. Killed you once, I'll kill you twice. Macon shook his head. Nursery rhymes, Hunting? If you are planning a career as grandfather's minion, you're going to have to work on your delivery. Macon sighed. Now then, tuck your tail between your legs and follow your master home, like a good dog. Hunting's expression hardened. Macon turned to Abraham. And grandfather, as much as I would love to compare lab notes, I think it's time you leave. The old man laughed. A cold wind began to circle around him, whistling between the rocks. You think you can order me around like an errand boy? You will not call my name, Macon Ravenwood. You will cry my name. You will bleed my name. The wind grew around him, blowing his string tie awkwardly across his body. And when you die, my name will still be feared, and yours will be forgotten. Macon looked him in the eye without the slightest hint of fear. As my mathematically gifted brother clarified, I've already died once. You're going to have to come up with something new, old man. It's getting tiresome. Allow me to see you out. Macon fluttered his fingers, and I heard a ripping sound as the night opened behind Abraham. The old man hesitated, then smiled. My age must be catching up with me. I almost forgot to collect my things before I leave. He reached out his hand, and something emerged from behind one of the crevices in the rock. It vanished, reappearing in his hand. I held my breath for a second when I saw it. The Book of Moons. The book we believed had burned to ash in the fields of Greenbrier. The book that was a curse all its own. Macon's face darkened, and he held out his hand. That doesn't belong to you, grandfather. The book twitched in Abraham's hand, but the darkness surrounding him deepened, and the old man shrugged with a smile. A second ripping sound echoed across the cavern as he disappeared, taking the book and Hunting and Seraphine with him. By the time the echo died, the shallow tides washed away even the imprint of Seraphine's body in the sand. At the sound of the rip, Lena started to run. By the time Abraham was gone, she was across the rocky cave floor and halfway to Macon. He leaned against the rough wall until Lena threw herself into his chest, and Macon swayed as if he was going to fall. You're dead, Lena spoke into his dirty, ripped shirt. No, sweetheart, I'm very much alive. He drew her face up to look at him. Look at me. I'm still here. Your eyes, they're green. She touched his face, shocked. And yours are not. He touched her cheek, sadly. But they are beautiful, both the green and the gold. Lena shook her head in disbelief.
I killed you. I used the book, and it killed you.
Macon stroked her hair. Lila Jane saved me before I crossed over. She imprisoned me in an arc light, and Ethan released me. It wasn't your fault, Lena. You didn't know what would happen. Lena began to sob. He stroked her wild black curls, whispering, Shh, it's all right now. It's over. He was lying. I could see it in his eyes. The black pools that kept his secrets were gone. I didn't understand everything Abraham had said, but I knew there was truth in it. Whatever had happened when Lena claimed herself wasn't the solution to our problems, but a new problem, all its own. Lena pulled away from Macon.
Uncle Macon, I didn't know this was going to happen. One minute I was thinking about dark and light, about what I really wanted. But all I could think about was that I don't belong anywhere. After everything I've been through, I'm not light or dark. I'm both.
It's all right, Lena. He reached out for her, but she stood on her own.
It's not. She shook her head. Look what I've done. Auntie Twyla and Ridley are gone, and Larkin...
Macon looked at Lena as if he was seeing her for the first time. You did what you had to do. You claimed yourself. You didn't pick a place in the order. You changed it. Her voice was hesitant.
What does it mean?
It means you are yourself. Powerful and unique, like the Great Barrier. A place where there is no dark or light, only magic. But unlike the Great Barrier, you are both light and dark. Like me. And after what I saw tonight, like Ridley.
But what happened to the moon?
Lena looked at Grandma, but it was Amma who spoke up from the rocky ledge.
You split it, child. Melchizedek's right. The order of things is broken.
Can't say what'll happen now. The way she said broken made it clear that broken wasn't something we wanted the order to be.
I don't understand. You're all here, but so were Hunting and Abraham. How is that possible? The curse...
Lena faltered.
You possess both light and darkness, a possibility the curse did not account for. None of us did.
There was pain in Grandma's voice. She was hiding something, and I sensed things were more complicated than she was letting on.
I'm just glad you're all right.
The sound of water splashing echoed through the cavern. I turned in time to see Ridley's blonde and pink hair whip around the corner. Link was right behind her.
Guess I really am a mortal.
Ridley said it with her usual brand of sarcasm, but she looked relieved.
You always have to be different, don't you? Way to go and screw things up again, cuz.
I heard Lena's breath catch, and for a second she didn't move. It was all too much. Macon was alive when Lena believed she'd killed him. She had claimed herself and remained both dark and light. As far as I could tell, she had broken the moon. I knew Lena would fall apart moments from now. When she did, I would be there to carry her home. Lena grabbed Ridley and Macon, practically strangling them in her own kind of caster circle, seeming neither light nor dark. Just very tired, but no longer very alone. June 22nd. The Way Back Home. I couldn't sleep anymore. I had crashed hard last night on the familiar pine board floor of Lena's room,
We had both passed out, still wearing our clothes. 24 hours later, it was weird to be in my own room, in a bed again, after sleeping between tree roots on muddy forest floors. I had seen too much. I got up and shut my window in spite of the heat. There were too many things out there to be afraid of. Too many to fight. It was a wonder anyone in Gatlin slept at all. Lucille didn't have that problem. She was kneading a pile of dirty clothes in the corner, fluffing up her bed for the night. That cat could sleep anywhere. Not me. I flipped over. I was having a hard time getting comfortable with comfortable.
Me too.
I smiled. Floorboards creaked and my door swung open. Lena was standing in my doorway in my faded silver surfer t-shirt. I could see the tip of pajama shorts underneath. Her hair was wet and she was wearing it down again, the way I liked it best. This is a dream, right? Lena closed the door behind her, the slightest twinkle in her gold and green eyes. Do you mean your kind of dream, or mine? She pulled up the covers and climbed in next to me. She smelled like lemons and rosemary and soap. It had been a long road for both of us. She tucked her head under my chin and leaned against me. I could feel her questions and her fears beneath the covers with us.
What is it, Elle?
She burrowed deeper into my chest.
Do you think you'll ever be able to forgive me? I know things won't be the same.
I tightened my arms around her, remembering all the times it felt like I'd lost her forever. Those moments wound themselves around me, threatening to crush me under their weight. There was no way I could be without her. Forgiving her wasn't a question.
Things will be different. Better. But I'm not light, Ethan. I'm something else. I'm complicated.
I reached under the covers and brought her hand to my mouth. I kissed her palm where the swirling black patterns hadn't disappeared. It almost looked like Sharpie, but I knew it would never fade.
I know what you are, and I love you. Nothing can change that. I wish I could go back. I wish...
I pressed my forehead against hers.
Don't. You're you. You chose to be yourself. It's scary. My whole life I've grown up with dark and light. It feels strange not to fit in anywhere.
She flopped onto her back.
What if I'm not anything?
What if that's the wrong question? She smiled.
Yeah? What's the right one?
You're you. Who is that? Who does she want to be? And how can I get her to kiss me? She raised herself on her arms and leaned over my face, letting her hair tickle me. Her lips touched mine, and it was back. The electricity, the current that ran between us. I had missed it, even as it burned my lips. But something else was missing. I leaned over and opened the drawer of my nightstand, reaching inside.
I think this belongs to you.
I let the chain fall into her hand, her memories spilling between her fingers. The silver button she had fastened on a paperclip, the red string, the tiny Sharpie I gave her on the water tower. She stared into her hand, stunned.
I added a couple of things.
I untangled the charms so she could see the silver sparrow from Macon's funeral. It meant something so different now.
Amma says sparrows can travel a long way and always find their way back home. Like you did.
Only because you came to get me.
I had help. That's why I gave you this.
I held up the tag from Lucille's collar,
the one I carried in my pocket while we were searching for Lena, and I was watching her through Lucille's eyes. Lucille looked at me calmly, yawning from the corner of the room. "It's a conduit that allows mortals to connect with a caster animal," Macon explained it to me this morning. "You had it all this time?"
"Yeah, Aunt Prue gave it to me. It works as long as you have the tag."
"Wait, how did your aunt end up with a caster cat?"
"Aurelia gave Lucille to my aunt so she could find her way around the tunnels."
Lena started to untangle the chain, untying the knots that had formed since she lost it.
"I can't believe you found it. When I left it behind, I never thought I'd see it again."
She hadn't lost it. She had taken it off. I resisted the urge to ask her why.
"Of course I found it. It's got everything I've ever given you on it."
Lena closed her hand around it and looked away. "Not everything." I knew what she was thinking about, my mother's ring. She had taken off the ring, too, but I hadn't found it. Not until this morning, when I discovered it lying on my desk, as if it had always been there. I reached into the drawer again and opened Lena's hand, pressing the ring into it. When she felt the cool metal, she looked up at me.
"You found it?"
"No, my mom must have. It was sitting on my desk when I woke up."
"She doesn't hate me?"
It was a question only a caster girl would ask. Had the ghost of my dead mother forgiven her? I knew the answer. I found the ring lying inside a book Lena loaned me, Pablo Neruda's Book of Questions, the chain serving as a bookmark under the lines, "Is it true that amber contains the tears of the sirens?" My mother had been more of an Emily Dickinson fan, but Lena loved Neruda. It was like the sprig of rosemary I found in my mom's favorite cookbook last Christmas. Something of my mother's and something of Lena's together, as if that was always how it was intended to be. I answered Lena by fastening the chain around her neck, where it belonged. She touched it and stared into my brown eyes with her green and gold ones. I knew she was still the girl I loved, no matter what color her eyes were. There was no one color that could paint Lena Duquesne. She was a red sweater and a blue sky, a gray wind and a silver sparrow, a black curl escaping from behind her ear. Now that we were together, it felt like home again. Lena leaned into me, grazing my lips gently at first. Then she kissed me with an intensity that sent heat buzzing up my spine. I felt her find her way back to me, to our curves and our corners, the places our bodies fit together so naturally.
"Okay, this is definitely my dream," I smiled, running my fingers through her incredible mess of black hair.
"I wouldn't be so sure about that."
She ran her hands across my chest as I breathed her in. My mouth wandered down her shoulder, and I pulled her closer until I could feel her hip bones digging gently into my skin. It had been so long, and I had missed her so much. The taste of her, the smell of her. I held her face in my hands, kissing her even more deeply, and my heart began to race. I had to stop and catch my breath. She looked into my eyes, leaning back on my pillow, careful not to touch me.
"Is it any better? Are you... am I hurting you?"
"No, it's better."
I looked at the wall and counted silently, steadying my heart.
"You're lying."
I slid my arms around her, but she wouldn't look at me.
"We'll never really be able to be together, Ethan."
"We're together now."
I ran my fingers lightly down her arms, watching goosebumps spring up under my touch.
"You're 16, and I'll be 17 in 2 weeks. We have time."
Actually, in caster years, I'm already 17. Count the moons. I'm older than you now. She smiled a little, and I crushed her in my arms. 17. Whatever. Maybe by 18, we'll figure it out, El. El. I sat up in bed, staring at her. You know, don't you?
What?
Your real name. Now that you're claimed, you know it, right? She tilted her head to the side with a half-smile. I grabbed her up into my arms, my face hovering just above hers.
What is it?
Don't you think I should know?
Haven't you figured it out yet, Ethan? My name is Lena. It's the name I had when we met. It's the only name I'll ever have.
She knew it, but she wasn't going to tell me. I understood why. Lena was claiming herself again, deciding who she was going to be, binding us back together with the things we had shared. I was relieved, because she would always be Lena to me. The girl I met in my dreams. I pulled the cover up over our heads. Though none of my dreams went remotely like this, in a matter of minutes, we were both sound asleep.
June 22nd. New blood. For once, I wasn't dreaming. It was Lucille's hissing that woke me up. I rolled over, Lena curled up next to me. It was still hard to believe she was here, and she was safe. It was the thing I had wanted most in the world, and now I had it. How often did that happen? The waning moon outside my bedroom window was so bright I could see her eyelashes touching her cheek as she slept. Lucille leaped off the bottom of my bed, and something moved in the shadows. A silhouette. Someone was standing in front of my window. It could only be one person, who wasn't actually a person at all. I bolted upright in bed. Macon was standing in my room, and Lena was under the covers in my bed. Weakened or not, he was going to kill me.
Ethan?
I recognized his voice the second I heard it, even though he was trying to be quiet. It wasn't Macon. It was Link.
What the hell are you doing in my room in the middle of the night?
I hissed, trying not to wake Lena.
I'm in trouble, man. You gotta help me.
Then he noticed Lena curled into a ball next to me.
Oh, geez. I didn't know you were, you know, sleeping? At least someone can.
He was pacing, full of nervous energy, even for Link. His arm was in a cast, and it was swinging erratically. Even with only the dim light from the window, I could see his face was sweaty and pale. He looked sick. Worse than sick.
What's up with you, man? How did you get in here?
Link sat down in the old chair by my desk, then stood up again. His t-shirt had a hot dog on it and said, "Bite me." He'd had it since we were in eighth grade.
You wouldn't believe me if I told you.
The window was open behind him, the curtains blowing inside as if the breeze was being drawn into my room. My stomach was beginning to twist into a familiar knot.
Try me. Remember when Vampire Boy grabbed me on Hell Night?
He was talking about the night of the 17th moon, which would always be Hell Night to him. It was also the title of the horror movie that scared the crap out of him when he was 10.
Yeah?
Link was pacing again.
You know he could have killed me, right?
I wasn't sure I wanted to hear where this was going. But he didn't, and he's probably dead like Larkin. John disappeared that night, but no one actually knew what happened to him.
Yeah, well, if he is, he left a parting gift. Two, actually.
Link leaned over my bed. Instinctively, I jumped back, bumping into Lena.
What's going on?
She was half asleep, her voice deep and gravelly.
Relax, man.
Link reached past me and switched on the light next to my bed.
What does it look like to you?
My eyes adjusted to the dim light, and I saw two small puncture wounds on Link's pasty neck, the distinct mark made by two evenly set canines.
He bit you?
I jerked away from him, pulling Lena off the bed and pushing her against the wall behind me.
So I'm right? Holy crap!
Link sat down on my bed, dropping his head in his hands. He looked miserable.
Am I gonna turn into one of those bloodsuckers?
He was staring at Lena, waiting for her to confirm what he already knew.
Technically, yes. You're probably already turning, but it doesn't mean you're going to be a blood incubus. You can fight it, like Uncle Macon, and feed on dreams and memories instead of blood.
She pushed her way out from behind me.
Relax, Ethan. He's not going to attack us, like a vampire in one of your lame mortal horror movies where all witches wear black hats. At least I look good in hats, Link sighed. And black.
She sat down next to him on the edge of my bed.
He's still Link.
You sure about that? The more I checked him out, the worse he looked.
Yeah, I gotta know this sort of stuff.
Link was shaking his head, defeated. It was pretty obvious he had been hoping Lena was going to tell him there was some other explanation.
Holy crap. My mom's gonna throw me out of the house when she finds out. I'm gonna have to live in the beater.
It'll be okay, man. It was a lie, but what else could I say? Lena was right. Link was still my best friend. He had followed me into the tunnels, which was the reason he was sitting here now with two holes in his neck. Link ran his hands over his hair nervously.
Dude, my mom's a Baptist. You think she's gonna let me stay in the house when she finds out I'm a demon? She doesn't even like Methodists.
Maybe she won't notice. I knew it was a stupid thing to say, but I was trying.
Sure, maybe she won't notice if I never go out during the day because my skin'll fry off.
Link rubbed his pale arms as if he could already feel his skin beginning to peel.
Not necessarily.
Lena was working something out in her mind.
John wasn't your average incubus. He was a hybrid. Uncle M is still trying to figure out what Abraham was doing with him.
I remembered what Macon said about hybrids when he was arguing with Abraham at the Great Barrier, which already seemed like a lifetime ago. But I didn't want to think about John Breed at all. I couldn't forget seeing him with his hands all over Lena. At least Lena didn't notice.
His mother was an Evo. They can morph, transmutate into virtually any species, even mortals. That's why John could walk around during the day, while other incubuses have to avoid sunlight.
Yeah? So I'm what, like a quarter bloodsucker?
Lena nodded.
Probably. I mean, I can't be certain of anything.
Link shook his head.
That's why I wasn't sure at first. I was out all day and nothing happened. Figured it meant I was in the clear.
Why didn't you say something right away?
It was a stupid question. Who would want to tell their friends they were transforming into some kind of demon?
I didn't realize he bit me. Just thought I got worked over in the fight. But then I started feeling weird and saw the marks.
You'll have to be careful, man. We don't know much about John Breed. If he's some kind of hybrid, who knows what you can do?
Lena cleared her throat. Actually, I knew him pretty well. Link and I turned and looked at her at the same time. She twisted her necklace nervously.
I mean, not that well, but we were in the tunnels together for a long time.
And? I could feel my blood rising. He was really strong, and he had some kind of weird magnetism that drove girls crazy everywhere we went.
Girls like you? I couldn't help myself.
Shut up.
She nudged me with her shoulder.
This is starting to sound better already.
Link cracked a smile in spite of himself. Lena was going down the list of John's attributes in her mind, a list I was hoping wasn't too long. He could see and hear and smell things I couldn't. Link inhaled deeply, then coughed.
Dude, you really need a shower.
You've got superpowers now, and that's the best you can do?
I shoved him. He shoved me back, and I flew off the bed onto the floor.
What the hell?
I was used to being the one throwing him on the ground. Link looked at his hands, nodding with satisfaction.
That's right. Fists of fury. Like I always said.
Lena picked up Lucille, who had backed herself into a corner. And you should be able to travel. You know, materialize wherever you want. You won't need to use the window, even though Uncle Macon says it's more civilized.
I can walk through walls like a superhero?
Link was cheering up considerably.
You'll probably have a great time, except...
Lena took a breath and tried to act casual.
You won't really eat anymore. And assuming you plan to be more like Uncle Macon than hunting, you'll have to feed off people's dreams and memories to sustain yourself. Uncle Macon called it eavesdropping. But you'll have plenty of time because you won't sleep anymore.
I can't eat? What am I gonna tell my mom?
Lena shrugged.
Tell her you've become a vegetarian.
A vegetarian? Are you insane? That's worse than being a quarter demon.
Link stopped pacing.
Did you hear that?
Hear what?
He walked over to the open window and leaned out.
Seriously?
There were a few banging sounds on the side of the house, and Link hoisted Ridley through my window. I looked away dutifully, since most of Ridley's underwear showed at one point or another during the climb over the windowsill. It wasn't the most graceful entrance. Apparently, Ridley had cleaned up and gone back to looking like a siren, whether she was actually one or not. She pulled her skirt down and shook out her blonde and pink streaked hair.
Let me get this straight. The party's here, but I'm supposed to stay in my cell with the dog?
Lena sighed.
You mean my bedroom?
Whatever. I don't need the three of you hanging out together, talking about me. I have enough problems as it is.
Uncle Macon and my mom have decided I should go back to school, since apparently I'm not a danger to anyone anymore.
It looked like she was about to burst into tears.
But you're not.
Link pulled out my desk chair for her.
I'm plenty dangerous.
She ignored him, flopping down on my bed.
You'll see.
Link grinned. He hoped so. That much was clear.
They can't make me go to that backwoods dump you call a school.
Nobody was talking about you, Ridley. Lena sat down on the bed next to her cousin. Link went back to pacing.
We were talking about me.
What about you?
He looked away, but Ridley must have already seen something because she was across the room in a second. She grabbed the side of Link's face.
Look at me. What for?
Ridley zeroed in on him like a sibyl.
Look at me.
As Link turned, his pale, sweaty skin caught what little light the moon cast into the room, but it was enough light to see the puncture marks. Ridley was still holding his face, but her hand was shaking. Link put his hand on her wrist.
Rid, did he do this to you?
Her eyes narrowed. Even though they were blue now instead of gold, and she couldn't convince anyone to jump off a cliff, she looked like she could throw someone off one. It was easy to imagine her sticking up for Lena at school when they were kids. Link took her hand and pulled her toward him, slinging his arm around her shoulders.
It's no biggie. Maybe I'll get some homework done once in a while, now that I don't need any sleep.
Link cracked a smile, but Ridley didn't. This isn't a joke. John is probably the most powerful incubus in the Castor world, aside from Abraham himself. If Abraham was looking for him, there's a reason. I could see her biting her lip, staring out into the trees outside my window.
You worry too much, babe.
Ridley shrugged off Link's arm. Don't call me babe. I leaned back against my headboard, watching the two of them. Now that Ridley was a mortal and Link was an incubus, she would still be the one girl he couldn't have, and probably the only one he wanted. Junior year was going to be interesting. An incubus at Jackson High. Link, the strongest guy in school, driving Savannah Snow crazy every time he walked into the room without a single lick from one of Ridley's lollipops. And Ridley, the ex-siren, who I was pretty sure would find her way back to trouble, with or without the lollipops. 2 months until September, and for the first time in my life, I could hardly wait for the first day of school. Link wasn't the only one of us who couldn't sleep that night. June 28th. Sunrise.
Can't you dig any faster?
Link and I glared at Ridley from where we stood a few feet down in Macon's grave, the one he'd never spent a minute in. I was already dripping, and the sun wasn't even up yet. Link, with his newfound strength, had yet to break a sweat.
No, we can't. And yes, I know you're totally grateful we're doing this instead of you, babe.
Link waved his shovel at Ridley.
Why does the long way have to take so long?
Ridley looked at Lena, disgusted.
Why are mortals so sweaty and boring?
You're a mortal now. You tell me.
I tossed a shovelful of dirt in Ridley's direction.
Don't you have a cast for this sort of thing?
Ridley flopped down next to Lena, who sat cross-legged beside the grave, looking through an old book about incubuses.
How did you guys manage to get that book out of the Lunae Libri anyway?
Link was hoping Lena could find out something about hybrids.
It's not a bank holiday.
We'd gotten in enough trouble in the Lunae Libri during the past year. Ridley shot Link a look that probably would have brought him to his knees when she was still a siren.
He has a lot of pull with the librarian, genius.
As soon as she said it, the book Lena was holding caught fire.
Oh no!
She yanked her hands back before they were burnt. Ridley stomped on the book. Lena sighed.
I'm sorry. It just happens.
She meant Marion, I said defensively.
I avoided her eyes and busied myself with my shovel. Lena and I were back to being, well, us. There wasn't a second I didn't think about the proximity of her hand to my hand, her face to mine. There wasn't a moment when we were awake that I could bear to have her voice out of my head after I'd lost it for so long. She was the last person I spoke to at night and the first person I reached for in the morning. After everything we had been through, I would have traded places with Boo if I could. That's how badly I never wanted to let her out of my sight. Amma had even started setting a place for Lena at the table. At Ravenwood, Aunt Del kept a pillow and a comforter folded next to the downstairs couch for me. Nobody said a word about curfews or rules or seeing too much of each other. Nobody expected us to trust the world with each other if we weren't together. The summer had gone beyond that. You couldn't unhappen things. Liv had happened. John and Abraham had happened. Twyla and Larkin, Seraphine and Hunting. they weren't people I could just forget. School would be the same, if you ignored the fact that my best friend was an incubus and the second hottest girl in school was a declawed siren. General Lee and Principal Harper, Savannah Snow and Emily Asher, they would never change. Lena and I would never be the same. Link and Ridley were so supernaturally altered, they weren't even in the same universe. Liv was hidden in the library, happy to be safely tucked away in the stacks for a while. I had only seen her once since the night of the 17th moon. She was no longer training to be a keeper, but she seemed okay with it. "We both know I would never have been happy watching from the sidelines," she'd said. I knew it was true. Liv was an astronomer, like Galileo, an explorer like Vasco da Gama, a scholar like Marion, maybe even a mad scientist like my mom. I guess we all needed to start over. Plus, I got the feeling Liv liked her new teacher as much as her old one. Liv's education had been turned over to a certain former incubus who spent his days out of sight, in Ravenwood or his favorite study, an old haunt in the Castor Tunnels, with Liv and the head Castor librarian as his only mortal companions. It wasn't how I expected the summer to turn out. Then again, when it came to Gatlin, I never knew what was going to happen. At some point, I had stopped trying. "Stop thinking and start digging." I dropped my shovel and pushed up against the side of the grave. Lena leaned over on her stomach, her ratty Converse kicking up behind her. I put my hands around her neck and pulled her mouth to mine until our kiss made the graveyard spin.
"Kids, kids, keep it clean. We're ready."
Link leaned on his shovel and stood back to survey his handiwork. Macon's grave was open, not that there was a coffin down there.
"Well, I wanted to get this over with."
Ridley pulled a small bundle of black silk out of her pocket and held it in front of her. Link pulled back as if she had shoved a torch in his face.
"Watch it, Rid. Don't get that thing anywhere near me. Incubus kryptonite, remember?"
"Sorry, Superman, I forgot." Ridley climbed down into the hole, holding the bundle carefully with one hand, and placed it in the bottom of Macon Ravenwood's empty grave. My mom may have saved Macon with the arc light, but we saw it for what it was. Dangerous. A supernatural prison I didn't want to see my best friend trapped inside. 6 feet under was where the arc light belonged, and Macon's grave was the safest place any of us could think of.
"Good riddance," Link said as he pulled Ridley up out of the grave. "Isn't that what you're supposed to say when good defeats evil at the end of the movie?"
I looked at him.
"Have you ever read a book, man?"
"Dig." Ridley rubbed dirt off her hands. "At least, that's what I say." Link piled shovelful after shovelful of dirt over the bundle while Ridley watched, without taking her eyes off the grave.
"Finish it," I said.
Lena nodded, jamming her hands in her pockets.
"Let's get out of here."
The sun began to rise over the magnolias in front of my mom's grave. It didn't bother me anymore, because I knew she wasn't there. She was somewhere, everywhere else, still watching out for me. Macon's hidden room, Marion's archive, our study at Waits Landing.
"Come on, El."
I pulled Lena by the arm.
"I'm sick of the dark. Let's go watch the sunrise."
We took off, running down the grassy hill like kids, past the graves and magnolias, past the palmettos and oaks tangled in Spanish moss, past the uneven rows of grave markers and weeping angels and the old stone bench. I could feel her shivering in the early morning air, but neither of us wanted to stop. So we didn't, and by the time we reached the bottom of the hill, we were almost falling, almost flying, almost happy. We didn't see the eerie golden glow pierce through small cracks and fissures in the dirt shoveled over Macon's grave, and I didn't check the iPod in my pocket where I might have noticed a new song in the playlist. 18 Moons. But I didn't check, because I didn't care. No one was listening, no one was watching, no one existed in the world but the two of us. The two of us and the old man in the white suit and string tie who stood at the crest of the hill until the sun began to rise and the shadows fell back into their crypts. We didn't see him. We only saw the fading night and the rising blue sky. Not the blue sky in my bedroom, but the real one. Even though it might look different to each of us. Only now, I wasn't so sure the sky looked the same to any two people, no matter what universe they lived in. I mean, how could you be sure? The old man walked away. We didn't hear the familiar sound of space and time rearranging as he ripped into the last possible moment of night, the darkness before the dawn.
18 moons, 18 spheres from the world beyond the years. One unchosen death or birth, a broken day awaits the earth.
After. Siren's tears. Ridley stood in her room at Ravenwood, the room that used to belong to Macon. But nothing remained the same except the four walls, a ceiling, and a floor, and possibly the paneled bedroom door, which she shut with a heavy click and bolted. She turned to face her room, her back against the door. Macon had decided to take another room at Ravenwood, though he spent most of his time in his study in the tunnels. So this room belonged to Ridley now, and she was careful to keep the trap door leading down into the tunnels locked under thick pink shag carpeting. The walls were covered with spray-painted graffiti, black and neon pink mostly, with shots of electric green, yellow, and orange. They weren't words exactly, more like shapes, slashes, emotions. Anger bottled in a can of cheap spray paint from the Walmart in Somerville. Lena had offered to do it for her, but Ridley insisted on doing it herself, mortal style. The reeking fumes made her head ache, and the splattering paint made a huge mess of everything. It was exactly what she wanted, and exactly how she felt. She'd made a mess of everything. No words. Ridley hated words. Mostly they were lies. Her two-week incarceration in Lena's room had been enough to make her hate poetry for a lifetime. My beating heart bleeding needs you. Whatever. Ridley shuddered. There was no accounting for taste in the family gene pool. She pushed herself away from the door and walked over to the wardrobe. With the slightest touch, she opened the white wooden doors, revealing a lifetime's careful collection of clothing, the hallmark of a siren, which she reminded herself she wasn't. She dragged a pink footstool to the shelves and climbed up on it, her pink platform shoes slipping back and forth in her pink striped knee socks. It had been a Harajuku kind of a day, not often seen around Gatlin. The looks she got at the Dairy Queen were priceless. At least it had passed the afternoon. One afternoon. Out of how many? She felt along the top of the shelf until she found it, a shoebox from Paris. She smiled and pulled it down, purple velvet, 4-inch peep toes, if she remembered. Of course she remembered. She'd had some damn fine times in those shoes. She dumped the contents of the box onto her black and white bedspread. There it was, half shrouded in silk, still covered with crumbling dirt. Ridley slumped down on the floor next to her bed, resting her arms on the edge. She wasn't stupid. She just wanted to look, as she had every night for the past 2 weeks. She wanted to feel the power of something magical, a power she would never have again. Ridley wasn't a bad girl, not really. Besides, even if she was, what did it matter? She was powerless to do anything about it. She'd been tossed aside like last year's mascara. Her cell phone rang, and she picked it up from her nightstand. A picture of Link popped up on the screen. She clicked it off and tossed it into the endless pink shag. Not now, Hot Rod. She had another incubus on her mind. John Breed. Ridley settled back into place, tilting her head to the side as she watched the sphere begin to glow a subtle shade of pink. What am I going to do with you? She smiled because, for once, it was her decision to make, and because she had yet to make it. 3. The light grew brighter and brighter until the room was bathed in a wash of rose-colored light, which made almost everything else disappear like thin pencil lines that had been only partly rubbed out. 2. Ridley closed her eyes, a little girl blowing out a birthday candle to make a wish. 1. She opened her eyes. It was decided. Acknowledgements. Writing a book is hard. It turns out writing a second book is twice as hard. Here are the people who got us through the many phases of our 17th moon. Our beloved agents, Sarah Burns and Courtney Gatewood, with help from Rebecca Gardner from the Gernert Company, who continue to shepherd Gatlin County to new and faraway places no piece of pecan fried chicken has ever seen. Sally Wilcox at CAA for bringing Gatlin County to a town where nobody would ever touch a piece of fried anything. Our brilliant team at Little Brown Books for Young Readers, our editors, Jennifer Bailey Hunt and Julie Shina, our art director, David Kaplan, our marketing guru, Lisa Ikowitz, our queen of library services, Victoria Stapleton, our publicity guru, Melanie Chang, and our publicist, Jessica Kaufman, who are as good at what they do as Amma is at crossword puzzles. Our amazing foreign publishers and editors, especially Amanda Punter, Cecile Terouan, Suzanne Stark, Miriam Galaz, as well as those we have yet to meet, who have welcomed us into their houses and their countries. Our number one Spanish fan, author Javier Ruescas, who not only blurbed our book in Spain, but spread the word. Our favorite reader, Daphne Durham, who gets us, and more important, Ethan and Lena. There isn't a cream of casserole big enough to show her how we feel, even with cornflakes or tiny fried onions or mashed up potato chips on top. Our resident teen classicist, Emma Peterson, who translated Latin casts while cramming for AP Virgil. Our frightening teen editor, Mae Peterson, who no doubt will go on to terrify many other writers in the future. Our boss photographer, Alex Horner, whose photo of us looks nothing like us, so we love it. Vanya Stoyanova, for her beautiful trailer, amazing photos, and her work as co-administrator of our U.S. fan site. Yvette Vasquez for reading our drafts 100 times, blogging our tour, and acting as co-administrator of our U.S. fan site. The creators of our international fan sites in France, Spain, and Brazil, Ashley Stoll, who designed book plates and invites, built websites, and took photos that brought the South to life for readers around the world. Anna Moore, for building our Beautiful Creatures site 2.0. Author Gabriel Paul, who creates all the brilliant online games for our tours and promotions. Our caster girls, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, and 25. You are the heart of the Caster Chronicles, and always will be. Our YA writing mentors, WP authors, book blurbers, trailer makers, fan site designers, fellow debut authors, bloggers, Ning Goodreads friends, and of course, our tweethearts. Like Gatlin's postmaster, Carlton Eaton, we hear all our news from you first, and whether good or bad, it's better to hear it from one of your own. Nobody will ever know how much fun you make, even the Cave O' Revisions. Our families, Alex, Nick, and Stella Garcia, and Louis, Emma, May, and Kate Peterson, and all our respective moms, dads, sisters, brothers, nieces, nephews, sisters-in-law, party-throwing cousins, and friends. From Aunt Mary to Cousin Jane, you have always been there for us. Stoles, Rakas, Marins, Garcias, Petersons. By now, you have every right to hate us, but oddly, you don't. Debbie Lindy and Susan and John Raka for housing us on our mini Southern field trips. Bill Young and David Golia for being our knights in shining armor. India's and Natalia's daddy for helping us when we were supposed to be helping him. Sandra Mitchell for everything as always. Our readers, teachers, and librarians, the casters and outcasters, who discovered Beautiful Creatures and loved it enough to take another trip through the tunnels with us. Without you, they're just so many words. Our mentor, Melissa Marr, and our therapist, Holly Black. They know why. Dr. Sarah Lindheim, our keeper, who knows our casts better than we do. And finally, Margaret Miles, librarian and youth services director at the new Hanover County Library in Wilmington, North Carolina. Because Marion Ashcroft isn't the only caster librarian, after all.
This has been an Hachette audio production of Beautiful Darkness, written by Cami Garcia and Margaret Stoll, read by Kevin T. Collins. Produced by Michelle McGonigal. Directed by Graham Malcolm. Recorded by Tommy Herron. Edited by Eve Seltzer. Mixed and mastered by Brendan Feeney. Original music by Michelle McGonigal, with lyrics by Cami Garcia and Margaret Stoll. Beautiful Darkness is also available in print from Little Brown & Company, a division of Hachette Book Group. Text copyright 2010 by Cami Garcia and Margaret Stoll. Audio production copyright and published 2010 by Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. Except as permitted under the U.S. Copyright Act of 1976, no part of this production may be reproduced, distributed, or transmitted in any form or by any means, or stored in a database or retrieval system without the prior written permission of the publisher. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales, is entirely coincidental.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.